Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network.
Has the human species procrastinated too long to have any chance of effectively addressing the climate emergency? Let's talk about that right now on The Voice of Reason.
You are about to enter the arena of real news and factual commentary on The Voice of Reason here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Now, here are your hosts for today's program, Ed Golly and Joe Reinhardt.
Well, climatologists warn that we have about 11 years remaining to take the necessary action to curb carbon emissions if we're going to have any chance of stopping the climate from warming to the point of having a severe and disastrous impact on the human family. The less time we have, the more precious it becomes and the more drastic action that'll need to be taken if we have any chance of arresting the warming. Now, we've just wasted four extremely valuable years under the current administration of the most incompetent president in history, whose ignorance of science is absolutely astonishing.
Well, worse than wasted, we actually went backwards.
Well, you're quite right about that, advocating burning more coal and cutting mileage standards for cars. Yeah, we're working backwards. But even presuming we get a real president in the White House next year, have we really ignored the situation too long to be able to stave off the catastrophic consequences of the climate change? Well, to bring us some factual insight into this situation, my co-host Joe Reinhardt and I, Ed Golly, welcome our special guest, Kent Bailey of the Sierra Club, to the Tan Talk studio. Kent's chair of the local Sierra Club organization, and we'll tell you about it a little bit later on in the program. But Kent, the wildfires in the West have compelled governors to finally state outright that the fires are directly attributed to climate change and that the human species is directly responsible.
That's right. And the consequences are not going to be escapable of what we've already done. We've lost more than 4 years. We've lost 20 years, really.
Agreed.
Where we should have moved on this and could have moved on it in a way that would be a lot less disruptive and a lot less painful. But nothing we can do now is going to prevent significant and serious climate damage, fires, sea level rise, more destructive storms. We know what's coming. It's been coming for a long time. And everything we can do right now is not going to be enough to avoid significant impacts for the generations to come.
Just the loss to the insurance companies will make it such that either you cannot buy insurance because they all went bankrupt, or it's so expensive that it costs more than what you stand to lose. Alone ought to wake up a lot of people, and it does them no physical harm, but it hits them where they think, which is, of course, their pocketbook.
Exactly right. Zillow, for example, has documented that in terms of sea level rise alone, the first 6 feet of sea level rise is going to cause the loss of 413 billion dollars in Florida real estate. Now, those are insured losses. So, what is a 400 plus billion dollars going to do to the assets of the insurance companies? I can tell you, it's going to make home ownership out of reach in a lot of places where people really want to live right now, and we need drastic reform to stop rebuilding our homes in areas where we know they're threatened. I know personally of homeowners who have collected three times on the same property getting flooded. And this is crazy. You know, and their rates go up, sure, but it's a shared burden by everybody. And the way that the insurance industry in Florida works, you could, if you live in Polk County, you're paying higher rates for the folks who are living in the coastal areas because it's a shared risk. And we've just got to stop reinsuring and rebuilding places where we know it's not going to be sustainable.
And people who live along the seashore tend to be among the more well-heeled. So it's another example of subsidizing the rich.
It certainly is. We are doing all the wrong things at this point, pretty much. The good news is that in spite of the government heavily subsidizing the fossil fuel industry, $15 billion a year in direct subsidies to the fossil fuel industries, and hundreds of billions of dollars in indirect subsidies, exemptions to clean air, clean water, safe drinking water acts enjoyed by a fossil fuel industry that make fracking possible, by the way. You couldn't have done it without the Cheney Energy Bill creating these Halliburton loophole that permits the injection of toxic substances into the ground where we need to, where we're going to get our drinking water from later on. This is completely the wrong thing to do, even though the government is doing everything it can to make fossil fuels cheap and affordable and easy to get. Solar energy, wind energy is still now the cheapest form of new energy available.
And yet I read in the September-October issue of the Sierra magazine, which Sierra Club publishes, that the end of oil may be near and that 2019 may prove to have been the peak year for oil consumption. I know there are armadas of tankers sitting off the coast of San Francisco and other oil ports that have no place to offload the oil, right? So they're just sitting out there because there's no market for it. If this downturn starts, hopefully, then we'll start to see a reduction in those subsidies because it's pointless to be drilling up oil that nobody wants to burn or that there isn't an adequate demand for.
Well, when you fill every time you buy gas for your car, which I know you don't do because you're driving electric, thank you very much, the price at the pump reflects the fact that people are buying less oil. Now, and this isn't because of brilliant policies by Washington. This is because people are driving less and they're driving electric more, and that's a trend that is going to continue. It is cheaper to drive electric over the long run. We need to electric buses by far are cheaper to own and operate for municipalities.
I understand we just got four of them for Hillsborough County. And when the power supply is the solar panels on the roof of the EV owner's house, it's a free ride and clean.
And it is reliable.
It is reliable.
The Pentagon has received reports from panels looking at the national security aspects of our current grid system. We have a spoken hub system that has evolved through accretion over the last 100 years. It is increasingly unstable. This is one of the things that sparks those fires in California is these high voltage transmission lines. The control systems for this grid have been identified as a point of extreme vulnerability to cyber attack by by such as a China. You know, so the first thing that happens when we are under attack is going to be that the lights will go out because the computers that control this 100-year-old grid system will shut down. What the Pentagon experts have recommended, and this has been out there for years now, is that we replace this spoken hub centralized system with rooftop solar and distributed solar in Florida or distributed grid elsewhere. You can use hydro, you can use wind, you can use solar. There's even geothermal, tidal, all kind of things are happening. And this is how we make a robust, resilient system. A microgrid where if something happens to one area, it doesn't put everything out.
Exactly.
Instead, over in Hillsborough County now, TECO is spending $1 billion to convert from coal to natural gas to build a plant that will never reach the end of its service life. It's a 30 to 50 year plant. Okay, it's $1 billion, that's not TECO's money.
It's still
okay,
a lot
that's
less
the ratepayers' money.
On a nuclear power plant. It's far cheaper than a nuclear power plant.
Nuclear is just out of sight. But before this plant gets mature, the cost of renewable energy, which continues to go down, especially battery storage, the battery prices are dropping like a rock, and there's all kind of new technology coming on board with that. So about halfway through the first 30 years, this big billion-dollar plant over there at TECO is going to find that it can't compete in the marketplace.
Wow.
The cost of operating it and buying fuel, which, by the way, TECO buys the fuel from TECO. You know, TECO is owned by Emera, and Emera sells a lot more than, like, they sell a lot of gas, fracked gas. So they're buying the fuel from themselves, and it's not going to be cost effective, notwithstanding the fact that they put this thing in a place that can't withstand more than a very few feet, 2 or 3 feet of sea level rise, and the roads are going to be periodically inundated going into there. 4 or 5 feet of sea level rise, and you're going to have to get there by ferry.
But isn't that because they get the Public Service Commission allows them to guarantee a 20% profit on every power plant they build?
The Florida Public Service Commission it does not serve the public.
Right.
It serves the utilities. The exact same proposal that for Big Bend conversion from coal to gas came up with, it was Vectren. It was up in Indiana, I believe, might have been Illinois. Public Service Commission in that state said no. You are exposing the ratepayers to unnecessary risk here.
Wow.
This is not a good investment of ratepayers' funds. Go back and look at renewables, look at alternatives, and bring us a different proposal. In Florida, they said, good on you, TECO. Go right ahead.
Then I read the editorial that appeared in the Sunday paper from two fellas, Chris Sprouls, who's the incoming Speaker of the Florida House, and Senator Wilton Simpson, incoming President of the Florida Senate, both of whom consider the Green New Deal overpriced and entirely unrealistic. They're, rather than address how we can arrest and reverse climate change, they instead conclude that we should take three courses of action. First, elevate flood mitigation by enhancing beaches, dune systems, seawalls, and water retention areas. Two, further engage the federal government to rebuild hurricane-impacted areas. And three, address the disparate local impacts of the challenge. It seems to me that's like if your kitchen's on fire, instead of getting a fire extinguisher and calling the fire department, you close the door, go in the living room, and watch TV, and you don't have a problem. For now, but 30 minutes later, you don't have a house.
It's a lot of money being spent that had they applied it to the actual causes, again, would do far more global good.
Do you want to talk about the Green New Deal? I think it gets blown out of proportion by those who resist it, but to me, the money spent now is going to be significantly less than trying to address the consequences of ignoring the climate change that we're causing.
And the Green New Deal has gotten a lot of misrepresentation and a bad rap, and it really would happen all by itself if you stop subsidizing fossil fuels. The other thing is the idea that we cannot afford to solve the climate crisis is a total canard. We can't afford not to solve it. Moreover, it won't cost anything to solve this problem. It will save money. It will, you know, the production of renewable energy is cheaper than the production of fossil fuel industry. And we're not even looking at the cost, the full, when you look at the cost of burning fossil fuels, it was most recently estimated at $5.6 trillion, 6.5% of the gross domestic product of the world, eaten up by climate impacts due to fossil fuels and directly related health impacts, the pollution that it has on. 4 million premature deaths a year.
Wow.
From burning fossil fuels. And the alternative is, and you know, we missed a great opportunity when this horrible virus came in, when the pandemic hit and we shut down. There were a lot of opportunities missed, but there was a great opportunity missed in terms of, here we had America basically on hold. We paused for a second. What an opportunity to come in and retool America to be renewable energy and create all the jobs, millions and millions of good-paying jobs, union jobs, that people can support a family on, retooling America to run on renewable energy, increasing energy efficiency, developing charging stations for EVs, the work that could be done and should be done. And it would pay for itself over time. This is not an expense. This is an investment in your future. Or you can spend $1 billion for a fossil fuel plant that's going to put your state underwater.
And if they'd quit subsidizing fossil fuels, the prices would go up and the incentive to go renewable would go up as well. So you'd save money coming and going.
Absolutely.
On that arrangement.
Absolutely. So
not to mention your health.
Well, you know, there's of the 4 million premature deaths, about a million are in Asian subcontinent, another million are in China, and then 2 million scattered around the world. India and China both have been using way too much fossil fuel, but, you know, they are transitioning more quickly than the United States, even though they understand they got a problem. But, you know, their per capita carbon footprint, by the way, is a tiny fraction of what an American's carbon footprint is.
But China's still putting a coal-fired power plant online approximately every 10 days or so?
Or 2 weeks. Yeah, but they're pushing ahead with coal-fired at this time. However, they're also deploying a lot more renewable than the United States is, too. A fantastically accelerated economic development is happening there.
But they have such a huge population. I'd never heard of Wuhan, China, before the virus hit, and yet there is not a single city in the United States that's as large as Wuhan with 11 million people. There's not any city in the U.S. that has that many people, and I'd never heard of the place.
Right.
And I think that's why they need so much power. It's just unbelievable.
The whole state of Florida.
I know it. It's half the population of Florida, just in one city. It's such an enormous country. But if you just join us, 1023, you're listening to the Voice of Reason on the TAN Talk Radio Network. We're speaking today with Kent Bailey from the Sierra Club. Kent, if our listeners want to know more about Sierra Club, what you do, or how they could find out more information about you on the internet or join.
Yes, thank you. You can, if you Google Tampa Bay Sierra Club, that will take you right to the webpage for our group. And we are not meeting in person these days. We're not doing anything in person. The pandemic has put a hold on all in-person activities. We're looking forward to renewing, at least getting started with our outings, which are great opportunities for people to come and have a firsthand experience with nature. We have terrific outing leaders that can make what you're seeing relevant to what's going on. And we're looking forward to that happening. But for now, we're doing all of our meetings on the internet, and we're on Meetup. So Tampa Bay Sierra Club on Meetup, Tampa Bay Sierra Club with Google will take you right to it.
So really a great way for people that have recently moved to Florida to actually experience Florida outside the cities, right, by taking these outings and seeing what it's really all about.
Hillsborough County is blessed that they had the foresight to to develop the ELAP program, Environmental Land Acquisition Protection Program. So we have some terrific public lands that are very close to the city center. You're literally 20 minutes from downtown Tampa. You are in the wildest place you could possibly be in Florida.
That's just amazing.
Tell me, Kent, to what extent do you think overpopulation is simply the root of the problem? If we had 2 or 3 billion fewer people on this planet, would a large part of the problem simply evaporate?
There's a reality here with climate change, and it's a very ugly, ugly fact that we are going to see the loss of a lot of population. The answer is yes. We need the planet is exceeding its carrying capacity.
It's going to correct itself.
It is a national security threat that we know there's going to be more famine. There's going to be more hunger. There's going to be more climate refugees. There's going to be more wars. Bad things are going to happen. There's going to be more disease spread around.
The Pentagon has understood this for years. Isn't that right?
Have you given any thought to lobbying the Pope to come out in favor of birth control? Do some real good. I mean, he does more damage to this planet in an hour than I could do in a lifetime.
You know, the thing about birth control that we know is that when women are empowered, it takes care of itself.
Yes, sir.
When they are educated and provided the opportunity to limit the size of their families, it happens all by itself. For the problem, you know, we have these populations that are growing exponentially in areas where they could be easily limited if they just were educated and provided the opportunity. And at this point, I think it's mainly a matter of providing the opportunity for people. It's an unfolding tragedy what is happening in Africa and in the Asian subcontinent, and to a lesser degree in South America. It is horrible, and I'm not at all optimistic for the future in that regard. I just don't see how we're gonna the impact of climate change on agriculture alone, both in terms of the higher temperatures. You know, the shifting of the seasons, and also in the fact that we're getting wetter floods, drier droughts. So, you know, when you look at agriculture in Florida, for example, I was trying to imagine, you know, in 20 or 30 years, what Florida agriculture will look like, because it's not going to be what it is today. It can't be, because I have lived in the same place for 40 years. I have gardened every year. And I can tell you that it's not the same. It is. When was the last time you sat up on the late night TV and saw the strawberry farmers out in Plant City standing in their fields with their thermometer ready to turn on the sprinklers? It's been years. It's been years. It doesn't freeze out there anymore.
Yeah, you're right. I've noticed that. The fact, I think, that is most sobering to me is that a 3-foot rise in sea level would inundate every delta in the world, like the Mississippi Delta, the Mekong Delta, the Nile Delta, and probably, half of Bangladesh, which are areas that now support large populations of people that need to move inland, where there's already other large populations of people who are really maximizing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Particularly since the people will probably be very poor and needy, and poor people are not welcome, just like poor tourists.
There are communities that rely entirely on a water supply from glaciers that pretty soon won't be sending any water down the mountain, so they're not going to be able to farm very well. So it seems to me that we're going to see a lot more people shooting each other. And
a market correction.
Exactly. Than we saw in the 20th century with 2 world wars and a pandemic and everything else that we suffered through. I just see that before the end of this century, It's going to be a world that we don't even imagine.
I think we're very close to the population peak. I really do. I think we're very close to the point where the population of the planet starts to go down, which will be good for the planet. And, you know, human beings, for all of their effort, are not going to destroy the planet. The planet will be fine.
It's going to be hard to live here. Do you see any sort of an immediate catastrophe that could radically change things overnight, such as the release of a massive ice shelf in Antarctica, or an acceleration of the melting of the Greenland?
Nuclear war.
Well. You know, earlier this week, the National Academy of Science identified, issued a report, and they've looked at 20 years of time-lapse of photography at the Pine Island and Thwaites glaciers on the western Antarctica. These are glaciers that are coastal, and they are the rising sea level is allowed water to come under these glaciers and is lifting them up off the rock, the bedrock, the ground where they previously had been. They are in danger of collapsing. They're a cork in a bottle for a massive amounts of ice that are behind them. And it looks as if they're getting ready to cut loose. It'll be 4 feet of sea level rise. 4 feet of sea level rise when this ice that is on these glaciers lets go and the ice behind them comes in the way. We know historically that we can see fantastic amounts of sea level rise in relatively short periods of time. The meltwater pulses that have been documented talk about on the order of 100 feet of sea level rise over a few hundred years. And that's like instantaneously in terms of geological time scale.
Yeah. Two things about that. One is that it means there's going to be no more Clearwater Beach, right? We'll go out there and we'll just see Gulf, Seawall, Hotel.
Right? It'll still be there. It'll just be in Ocala. That's all.
And even though the politicians and the general public finally accepts that we are experiencing global warming, so many of them still refuse to acknowledge that the human species has anything to do with it. I don't know what they think all is happening to all this carbon that we've been pumping into the atmosphere for 200 years, but that sense of denial is still the obstacle, apparently, to dealing with it. They're thinking that, well, it's just happening and there's nothing we can do about it to change it or to arrest it, is the biggest tragedy to me about how we're reacting to it.
It's willful ignorance. There is the fossil fuel industry makes hundreds of billions of dollars a year in profit. They spend $100 million a year creating doubt, denial, and delay on climate action. They spend another $100 billion each election cycle influencing directly politicians. So there is that side of it. The other thing is, as with the virus, people choose not to believe that something bad is happening. And it doesn't help. It doesn't help that we have a terrible example set at the highest levels of government. Mm-hmm. You know, the fires in California have been a part of the climate change prediction forever. You know, the increased fires and increased, you know, forest management has got nothing to do with humidity and droughts and high winds. Now, this is climate change. Yeah. And forest management in California, which, oh, by the way, as you pointed out earlier, Ed, is mostly federal land anyway. But we need to have Comrade Trump get on the phone with Comrade Putin and talk about Siberia, which is burning at a furious rate. And and it's even worse in Siberia. You know, they have basically, those forests are growing on peat bogs. So the fires burn, the permafrost melts, the fire goes into the ground now. You have a peat fire underground. How do you put that out? You don't. You
and
basically
releasing
cannot.
Releasing carbon all the time.
All like of this is releasing carbon upon carbon upon carbon. So, you know, there is just a mindset that if we ignore it, it won't hurt us. We'll just pretend that there is no pandemic. And you know, the pandemic response is so parallel. It is so fundamentally parallel to the climate denial problem. Yeah. By delaying action, by not acknowledging the problem early on and doing what the scientists, what the doctors, what the professionals said we need to do when we should have been doing it, now we're in a situation where the impact is going to be much, much, much worse. Our grandchildren and great-grandchildren were not fated to suffer through the climate impacts that they're going to suffer through. It was the indecision and the lack of action and the denial of science for the last 20 years that has created this crisis.
I think of the virus like a stop-action film that shows the accelerated results of what climate change is going to do to us, but it's happening faster all the time. And you mentioned scientists. I just saw last week more than 13,000 scientists have now signed the World Scientists warning of a climate emergency. Yeah. And it begins by affirming that scientists have a moral obligation to tell it like it is before enumerating all the many alarming trends that make it urgently necessary to act, and yet many still believe scientists are just fabricating the claims to get grants and money.
I was about to say, I've heard that that's the reason for the climate hoax, and that is so that all these scientists can get this unlimited supply of lucrative grants to carry on unnecessary research
and
pad their own pockets.
They don't understand what peer review is, right?
Well,
and peer review is what legitimizes the science. If you just argue to me that if you drink a quart of orange Kool-Aid and flap your arms, you can fly, we don't just accept it based on what you said. The other people in the community say, why is that going to work? Well, and when you can't demonstrate it, your science then is demonstrated not to be science.
Very,
and that's how
very
this...
Very few groups known to be more greedy than scientists.
or dishonest.
All right, I mean, look at the movies.
We're going to take a short break. We're talking to Kent Bailey from the Sierra Club. He will tell you a little bit more about that if you've just joined us recently later on in the program. And we're going to continue with the Voice of Reason here on the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Let's not forget
Hit a home run. Life struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
Tune in to the Ozone Gold Hour each and every Saturday at 11 a.m. hosted by me, your girl Heaven, and Avery L. We'll be playing your favorite Motown jams to get your Saturday morning started. That's the Ozone Gold Hour every Saturday morning, the only station where you can win gold.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I need fun.
That's what I want.
That's what I want.
Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's TAN Talk Radio Network.
Ed Golly with Joe Reinhart, our guest Kent Bailey in the TAN Talk studios with the Voice of Reason joining us for some questions. A fellow who is mixed up in the Post-Carbon Council and a friend of ours, Jim Peterson. Jim, hello, and what have you got for Kent today?
Hello, Ed. Okay. And hello, Kent. It's very good to hear from you again. We share a great deal in common. I was privileged enough to give a presentation on this very subject just a couple of days ago, and people seem pretty alert and pretty knowledgeable about what's going on, and that gives me hope that perhaps change might be possible. At any rate, you pretty much touched upon a lot of the things that we're concerned about. Although I prefer to talk about this as the crisis of the natural world, because it affects everything. Everything we do, everything that happens in the forest, the seas, the deserts, everything, everywhere. But I was greatly reassured by the interview that was held last week when our gracious leader and president said that not to worry. Everything's going to get cooler.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
And in fact, oddly enough, he might be correct. in that, there is an ocean current that we commonly call the Gulf Stream, known as the thermal halo incline, that circulates around the world, actually, and distributes heat from the tropics into other portions of the world, and most particularly warms Europe. If there is going to be the kind of melting that we fear off of Greenland in particular, where the current, which floats along the surface up to that point, plunges deep beneath the Atlantic, where it makes its trip around, continues its trip around the world, it could plunge Europe into something close to another ice age. It might be a few degrees warmer because of the conditions that we've been talking about here, but it could be the start of what might be to us another ice age. What do you think, Ken?
Well, that is a we don't really know exactly how this is all going to unfold, but you're absolutely correct. The breakdown of the Gulf Stream will have a tremendously destructive effect on agriculture, especially in Europe. It is something that we don't think about a lot. We're in terms of geological cycles, we ought to be going into an ice age. We're very fortunate to be trying to heat up the planet like we are at a time when we otherwise would be seeing a less
A trend toward an ice age, cooling temperatures, right?
Yeah, we would
Which
be going that away.
The heat. Yeah, it'd be worse.
Yeah,
if it was just neutral.
But you know, the cooling in Europe, which will be very bad for them, you know, will be offset by, of course, other temperature rises in other places. A curious thing. We're doing something to a planet we've never really done before. So, when the president says that it cooler, it could be a matter of getting cooler in Europe. Mm-hmm. Yes, that could be a factor.
Now, the other thing that I found to be interesting was this whole factor of what's it here? Forgive me.
We had a half an hour to get ready for this, and now you jump in.
I know.
Jeez.
I'm just, all right,
fine.
Terrible. Just terrible. It's a consequence of being out there. But here we are experiencing all of this heat. But what this heat really is the heat energy that's been stored away for millions of years underground in the form of fossil fuel energy, and which is mostly carbon. And we've taken that carbon out of the ground, where it's safely resided for quite a long time, and put it up in the air in the form of carbon dioxide. And this, it seems to me, is the fundamental reason why we're experiencing the kind of problems that we are. So the fact that we're coming to the end of the carbon age, again, gives me hope that perhaps it's still possible to salvage the situation, though we're still going to need it to some degree, simply because carbon is really quite a valuable chemical resource and can be used for a great many things other than simply burning it, which seems to me a stupid way to handle the situation.
May I just make a quick point about that? Because the idea that we should pump out all the oil that we can possibly pump at this time just to keep prices low is a bad idea strategically as well, for the reason that you cite, Jim, and that is draining America first of a very valuable resource is a terrible idea. Let other countries run out of oil. There is still again, so many things that are products and materials that are carbon-based on this planet, that oil will still be valuable, even if they're not using it for transportation or heating. So it's a bad idea to drain America first to keep prices low, as I said earlier, because it retards the advance of renewables, and it's a bad idea because it's militarily and strategically a bad idea as well.
Exactly. That's why we have a post-carbon council.
Oh, them.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, a lot of that petroleum products are winding up in the oceans. We're seeing a fantastic accumulation of plastics making its way up into the food chain. These plastics are not, the human body and other creatures don't really know how to process these man-made chemicals. These, when they come into, ground up into tiny, tiny, tiny little microparticles and get incorporated into our bodies to take on the roles of hormone emulators and so forth and so on. It's if we survive the global warming, we're going to have many, many decades of ocean cleanup to do. And, you know, I think that's an if.
I understand if you drink a shot of bleach on the rocks, it'll clean it right out. I'm not sure I heard that. I can't remember, so I can't verify that.
If you're standing in the properly lighted area.
Yeah. But then, on top of all this, to back up just a little bit, I understand that half of the carbon that starts out in the atmosphere ends up in the ocean, which is why the ocean temperatures are warming, and that at the same time we're just assaulting the Amazon rainforest, which is considered the Earth's lungs, to the point that maybe by the mid-century, half of what's now the rainforest that can draw that carbon out of the air and convert it to oxygen is just going to be a savanna.
Right. There's two things there. One of the nightmare scenarios for climate crisis is ocean acidification resulting in a die-off of phytoplankton. This has happened five times before. The oceans actually are the primary supplier of oxygen. The phytoplankton in the oceans is what contributes to about 70% of the ocean of the oxygen on the planet. So this is we've had five major extinction events in the past, and all five times the oceans died. They became anoxic, and the available oxygen in the atmosphere at sea level became approximately what it is now at, say, the top of Mount Everest. So that's a huge concern. And we get an awful lot of our protein for humans to eat out of the oceans. So, you know, that's a major problem. The Amazon is a particularly thorny issue. Comrade Trump started a trade war with China, which was going to be very easy to win, and China, being the sly people that they are, went to Brazil and said, "Hey, you know, we'd rather not buy our soybeans from the United States anymore. Do you think you could help us out there?" And Brazil is like, "Yeah. Yeah, we can grow all kind of stuff, and beef, and whatever you need, we can supply it here." So
troublemakers.
We just need to clear a little more land here. So the Trump's trade policies with China have inspired a deal between China and Brazil that is causing the rainforest to be burned down.
Unexpected collateral effects.
Yeah, second order consequences are something that this president just doesn't seem to comprehend, and it's.
Well, yeah. Ken, I've said this trope several times on this show, and I want to run it by you and see how close to the truth you think it may be. But my thoughts on the idea that we're going to be able to get together globally. With all of our disparate interests in different countries and come together in order to solve the problems related to climate change. If you think we can do that, you should go to Easter Island and count the trees.
Yeah. I recently was given a copy of Collapse, a book that outlines the failure of communities and civilizations, there's several instances there to act.
Cedars of Lebanon.
In spite of the fact that they were aware of what they were doing, they were unable to stop it. You know, and Time and time again, it's been demonstrated that human beings seem to have a real serious lack of foresight.
It's just a form of
the tragedy of the commons that we hear about, where people individually choose to act in individual interest, even though it's contrary to community interest, which is that's one of the reasons why we need to have a government, is to be able to protect common interest.
We don't have a global government, so.
Well, what we're eventually going to have, I believe, is because there's going to have to be a way to deal with the carbon disparity, and I think it will come to a carbon tax. And what will happen then is products that come from countries that are not going towards a post-carbon economy are going to have a fee, a tax assessed to their products. Now, this is going to, you got the China, the United States, the European Union. Okay, this is a lot of the trading goes on there. This is tariffs are not always a bad thing. Sometimes a tariff is a good thing. If it's a carbon tariff to say to China, which it's not going to be, and the United States, we're going to be the European Union, Germany's making great progress on moving to post-carbon economy. It can be done. It can be done, and Europe is moving that way much faster than the rest of us. China is probably going to get there before we do, even though, they got a lot of work to do. Yeah. The United States so far hasn't even been addressing this, but it's going to come down to, at some point, people are going to have to be responsible for the carbon that they produce, and it's going to have to be put into the price of their products.
And the remarkable thing is the southernmost square foot of Germany is far north of any part of the United States except for Alaska.
Yeah, but they benefit from the Gulf Stream so far.
Yeah, it just seems to me that 20 years ago we should have reached the point where nobody could get a building permit in Florida unless it included a solar array on their roof. And if they're in an environment where there's a lot of trees around, you don't want to cut the trees, so they could have solar panel fields built out in these phosphate mining areas on the fields that have been reduced to radioactive useless land. Yeah, and then your panels would be out there producing energy that comes into the grid. But we haven't even started talking about this yet.
That's right. And to look before we move completely off international issue, we need to understand. The climate crisis is not going to affect all countries equally. The breakdown of the Gulf Stream is going to hurt Europe very badly. But rising temperatures are going to open up vast areas of Russia, for example. When the studies are done on the long-term effect of the climate crisis in terms of how it's going to impact people's GDP and earnings, cost of food, all these things, Canada comes out slightly ahead. Russia comes out way ahead, okay? They have all that area that is too cold now. Yeah. So, Putin has very good reason for being skeptical about climate change and for relying so heavily on the development of exploitation of fossil fuel resources. It's in a warmer climate is going to make Russia, unless somebody like Napoleon or Hitler tries to invade Russia again, and they, because they won't have that severe winter to defeat those invading armies, they'll have to do it the old-fashioned way. But in terms of agriculture and economic impact, Russia will benefit. Mm-hmm. Has Putin planted the seeds of doubt in Comrade Trump's head? I don't know. They seem to get along awfully well.
Yeah. Jim, you have one last question we have time for?
Yes, I do. I have one last point that I thought might be worth discussion for the panel, and that is pollution. which has long been a matter of some concern ever since the original Earth Day back in 1970. But pollution, actually, broadly considered, is the movement of materials from points of concentration to dispersion. And when you consider what's happening, we talked about the oceans earlier, and the oceans have gotten increasingly polluted with so many different kinds of materials. Everything you put on the land eventually ends up in the sea. And that includes topsoils as well as fertilizers and plastics and all kinds of other things. It's just an immense problem and something that we have to consider. When you mine iron, you take it away from the Mesabi Range and you disperse it through all kinds of products, including ships and cans and everything else. And that's not going to reassemble itself again. And so we have what might be a crisis of resources looking at us in sometime in the far future, at least.
That's very, very true. You know, and one of the resources that we've become very reliant on is phosphate, which, of course, they take a lot of out of Central Florida. And we have a very finite supply of phosphate used in its natural state. As rock phosphate, it lasts so long in a farmer's field, it's considered a permanent soil amendment.
Wow.
When you convert it into ammonia phosphate to be used as fertilizer, it is highly water soluble. And instead of being a product that has to be applied only once every 20 years or so, it has to be applied several times a year, two or three times a year.
Why is that done?
Because there's more money.
But it's not to the farmer if he's got to keep buying it.
Well,
does it give him a better yield?
It does give you a slightly more intensive yield over the short term. But it winds up in the dead zone out here in the Gulf of Mexico, you know, creating red tide and all that. But we only have so much of it. And we will be running out of phosphate in a relatively short time. It may be 10 to 15 years here. Globally, it may be 30, 40, 50 years. Wow. But we're relying on chemical fertilizers to feed ourselves when we could be doing organic agriculture. It's a little more dispersed, but guess what? When you do organic agriculture, you actually are taking carbon out of the atmosphere. Organic agriculture is the only demonstrably cost-effective carbon sequestration technology available to us.
Wow. And when we run out of that phosphate, that's going to be when we need it most, right?
Because we're
always. Yeah.
We won't be able to get it. It'll be hard to get it back out of the ocean.
Point. So, yeah. So as you go through all these issues, I can see and certainly agree with you that the human species population probably is going to peak before the middle of the century and then start on a downturn just because we aren't addressing any of these issues fast enough. I mean, the scientists are still suspect because they can't predict with 100% accuracy.
I think the secondary effects will be far worse than the primary mm-hmm. effects. The warfare, the starvation, the plagues.
Well, we're almost out of time. Ken, if you want to mention again the Sierra Club and how our listeners can get in touch with you.
Yes. The easiest, simplest way is Google Tampa Bay Sierra Club. And that will get you right to our webpage. My contact information is there. It's quick and easy to do.
It's a membership organization, nonprofit.
You can join for $15.
And there's a National Sierra Club that produces a great magazine.
Yes. You'll get that magazine. The Sierra Club is the nation's oldest and largest environmental organization.
Well, Joe and I want to thank you for being here today, Kent Bailey, and I hope our listeners have gotten a lot out of it. I want to leave you with a quote from Alfred E. Newman. Plenty of people believe in energy conservation these days, mainly their own. Up next, Joy on Paper, your host Patsy with a Z. Tomorrow morning at 10, Paul Malloy will be here with Freedom Works, Trump Oversleeps. And now I hope you'll join us again next Thursday on The Voice of Reason, along with Joe Reinhart, Ed Golly, reminding you, if the tweet seems a little too implausible to be true, Don't believe it just because somebody tweeted it.
Make them prove it.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.
AP News.